Well, I think this one, Coach Sean, is quite honestly, I keep saying like it's the best yet because, you know, we've only had three episodes, so they just keep getting better and better. But I don't think we could have found anybody more perfect just because of the sentiments that we keep hearing over and over again of just really where we were, what decisions we made to change, and kind of how we dove into Live Unbreakable with just a decision to try something almost to a certain degree, and then just keep going at it until, well, now we're three episodes into a podcast. So, and for somebody who I didn't really know, you know, I didn't know very well, but coming out of it, I really see the connection, and I'm glad that we had her on as the first guest.
Andy was a friend before she was a friend in the industry. And I think it's so phenomenal to have watched her grow and kind of, I'll use the millennial term, quote unquote, glow up over the past couple years. And, you know, it is really awesome to see her not only reframe things in her life and in other people's lives, but to be someone that I know I can be vulnerable around and I can go to for that help as well. And today, honestly, it was the first time that we've had like a really big conversation about each of our businesses together and all of our sentiments on a very basic building block foundation kind of level are the same. And that reiterates, you know, all of the things that we've talked about on other podcasts too about, you know, making the decision and really, you know, taking that first step. So I'm so excited to be able to share her with all of you guys. Welcome to Crash Course. This is your weekly podcast brought to you by the Live Unbreakable brand. I'm your host, Live Unbreakable founder and head fitness and nutrition coach, Sean Provost. Alongside me, I have my co-host, strength and conditioning coach, Dan Murray. We're here every single week to give you a crash course in something about health and wellness, diving deep into the science behind diet and exercise.
In each episode, we look to provide you with the essentials on important topics and give you the best advice and training, mindset shifts, and overall healthier, sustainable living so you can make the best decisions for you and your lifestyle. No fluff, just facts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Crash Course podcast. I am your host, Sean. I am super excited today. For those of you who missed her on the Monday Minute, I have my friend Andy back on. And Dan, you never got a chance to talk to Andy, did you?
I did not because it doesn't
deprived
allow
you.
I almost made a dirty joke there. Instagram doesn't allow three people in the same room. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. So let's put our attention to Andy here because she's really one what the spotlight should be on right now. Andy, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what makes you so awesome.
Oh, hi, Dan. Hi, Sean. It's nice to be here. What makes me so awesome? Well, let's see. I am a running coach and I am a mindset coach, and I help people that are unhealthy, couch potatoes, bar flies, smokers, people that were what I used to be, which was exactly that, try to reframe their thoughts around health and wellness and fitness and just get healthy. And I've been working with clients now since November of last year. Before that, I tended bar for a living. I tended bar a long time. I have a master's degree in sociology. So a lot of the things that people, a lot of the things that happen with people is that they just need a little bit of reframes around the factors that are happening to them personally, but also the things that are happening in their environment that are affecting the way that they feel. And so I kind of take all of the parts of my life and just apply it to the way that I coach and train people and how I help them break a lot of their bad habits that are not serving them that they've been, quite frankly, fucking around with for way too long. So
I think it's so awesome to hear you talk about this because when I met you, Andy, you were, as you call yourself, a bar fly. And that's how we started bonding. And I don't think I could get you to go for a run with me when I met you, like what, 4 or 5 years ago now. I could have bribed you to go for a run and you still would not have touched it with a 10-foot pole. And now you are running marathons. So that is freaking awesome.
John, when we met, you were training for an Ironman and I was running like 11 minute miles. So to be fair, I mean, I had a little bit of imposter syndrome in the sport. And I think that, you know, that's another thing that I'm not going to say that imposter syndrome is my specialty, because I certainly have enough of it, as we all do. We definitely do. But I will say that I think, you know, correlating with that and just having to go through the process of being, like I said, an unathletic barfly to having to learn to define myself as an athlete has helped me understand the process that people have to go through in terms of shifting their mindset to be able to achieve that. Because it isn't just about the food that you put in your body or the exercise that you do every day. There's a psychological component that's far bigger. And I think people miss that. And that's why they fall off the wagon in, say, 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, 100%. That's super accurate. That psychological component is so large.
Well, because we also go, like, we want to completely change, right? So the lifestyle, you have to completely change your lifestyle, right? So the idea is to make like a 180 degree turn immediately, right off the bat, and not realize that kind of slowly needs to happen and that turn needs to happen. But there's got to be that moment where you had that aha moment, right? Where you're like, hey, I have to do this. No more messing around. Like, it's time to just get into it. When would you say you hit that point where it was like no excuses anymore? Just let's really just continue to grind until we get to a point where it's just second nature anymore.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I knew exactly when that moment was. So that is it. And it was a pretty shitty experience. So what happened to me was that I was in a relationship with a man who lived in another state, and it was a pretty toxic relationship. We drank constantly. In fact, the entire relationship revolved around alcohol. We met at a bar, my regular bar, his regular bar, which he didn't live in the same state as me. So that was what made it even cooler. But I went to visit him one night in January, and we were drinking pretty heavily. And again, I was kind of in that state of, I was pretty depressed. You know, things weren't really working out for me. And we started fighting. And, you know, we have different recollections of the evening because both of us were drinking a lot. And he drove me to the airport in the middle of the night, and he just left me there. And it was the middle of winter, and the TSA wasn't even there yet because they didn't – the Columbus airport, he lived in Ohio, they didn't get there till 5, and it was 2. So here I am just like sitting on this bench in the Columbus airport with – no place to go. And I remember reaching out to a friend of his that we were with earlier in the night. And I remember having such a low opinion of myself that I asked the friend if my now ex-boyfriend was okay, because he wasn't answering my phone calls. Like, I was concerned about him. And it was like almost, I don't want to say it was pathetic, but I just had such a low opinion of myself. And I finally was able to get a plane ticket. I bought it on Skiplagged, and the TSA showed up, and it was about 5:30. And there was this stranger that asked me, like, are you okay? And I'm sitting there like waiting for this flight that I bought, which was still a few hours off because, you know, it was a last minute flight. And I was like, this is awful. Like, I am a radiant person, and who the fuck is this fat piece of crap that doesn't value herself? Not that there's anything wrong with being overweight. There isn't. But to me, I was just so out of shape. I mean, like, things were going wrong with my body. I didn't have any energy. I just felt like everything was going to hell. I couldn't breathe. I was smoking over a pack a day. I mean, it was enough. And a friend of mine who is he's an AA, he's an alcoholic. He said that they define, and I don't know because I don't go to AA, but they define rock bottom as being the furthest away from your fullest potential. And I feel like that was the moment where I was like, okay, I am the furthest away from my fullest potential. You cannot get any further away than that. So it was about a week later that I joined an online community with a couple of friends and got my diet under control. That's like the first bit. You know, the first bit is getting that under control. And then it's been, and I think it's interesting that you brought it up, Dan, because it was you said that people think they need to do a 180. And in reality, it's a one degree. It's a one degree shift. And if you think about, like, and when I think about my life, I think I have done a 180, but it started with that one degree. Like, the one degree was okay, I don't eat processed food anymore. Like that was the first degree, you know?
The first degree was realizing that you didn't want to be where you were. The second degree was making a step towards it. And the third was the nutrition, right? And that's kind of what your story is alluding to, is you realized in that moment that it was that moment that you didn't want to be in anymore and that you couldn't have any more of those. And then what can I do to stop that from happening again?
Mm-hmm. And also I really try to reinforce that to people, is that, you know, it's baby steps, and it's like, you don't have to, I always say there's not a teleportation system from A to B, but you can walk quickly. So within, I would say, a couple of months, I had lost 40 or 50 pounds. I went from running 10, 30 minute miles to quitting smoking and running 8:30s. I mean, it was like, it was just overnight. But it wasn't overnight. It was daily work. But when an outsider, I mean, what do they say, that you're praised in public for what you practice in private? I mean, it was kind of like, and that's Tony Robbins. But either way, I mean, it was an outsider would say, oh, this just happened. But it wasn't. It was daily work. So when I work with people, I try to use my personal story of, okay, you know, you feel like you're not performing right now, but in reality, you're doing daily work. And if we can just get you to not be far off in the future, but in the present, you can ground yourself better and be able to make real change.
That's some of the reframing that you do with clients too, right? Is being able to say, hey, you're thinking way in the future right now. And what you need to be thinking about right now is that one degree. And what are some of the prompts that you use to help your clients or your friends reframe in the moment?
Well, I think that what I do with a lot of people, one of my big focuses is the idea that people are just uncomfortable in the present as they're making these small shifts. And a lot of people like to catastrophize that and say they're not doing well, they're not able to do this or that, that their body doesn't do this or their body doesn't do that. And so it's more of a, I always like to tell people, okay, well, you didn't learn to read in a day and you didn't learn to do algebra in a day. So I don't understand why you think, like for runners, for example, I'm just going to use runners as an example. For runners, I would say, well, you know, one of my running clients said, well, I feel like I'm just too big to run this far of a distance. And I'm like, no, your body hasn't practiced running longer than 90 minutes more than twice.
Right. With that like, attitude, you're not, you might be,
you know, yeah, not with know? That attitude.
Right.
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that. They think that there's something wrong with them. And it's like, no, you didn't learn to read in a day. What makes you think that your muscles are going to be – what makes you think that the conversion of, you know, of fast twitch to slow twitch muscle fibers is going to have – like that efficiency is going to happen in two long runs. Like it's not. Like it's going to take – longer than that. I mean, it's going to take time on your feet. You know, it's that kind of thing. When I'm working with people that are trying to say, stop eating so much sugar, or they're working on, you know, something like that, it's like, okay, well, you're just uncomfortable. You've been doing this one particular behavior for 25 years. So what makes you think that in 2 days, you're not going to do that anymore? Of course you're going to do it. A lot of that Hebb theory of, you know, neurons that fire together, wire together. And I did a lot of reading this year, and I'm a big fan of Dr. Joe Dispenza, and I'm currently in the middle of becoming Supernatural and just learning about how you get past a certain age, you've already solidified so much of, you know, your neural pathways, and you have to do active fucking work to undo that. So that's
some work. Right. Like active work, daily work. You have to think about it. You have to want to do it. It is hard work.
Well, because think about that day too. Like, you know, from a very early onset of life, these are still learned behaviors, right? Like they're still learned behaviors, you know, like your body, it's not as though, you know, to the body itself, to the mind, right? It's not that, you know, eating too much sugar, right? It's still something that you had to have acquired over time, right? In your childhood or at some point, you know, you were subconsciously still putting in work that every day you were putting sugar into your body. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, it's 2 o'clock. I need sugar. Well, again, you didn't realize subconsciously you're actually working on a learned behavior. So for people who kind of come at you like that, or maybe have run, I know you mentioned running. So maybe if they used to run in the past and had fallen off, let's say, you know, somebody who feels like their body should just snap right back into it. What are some ways that you speak to them to kind of, again, coach them to say, hey, we're still on a long process and we've come off of the road for quite some time?
Well, you know, what I would say to that is just the cautionary tale. So what I would say to somebody in that situation is you psychologically are at mile 15, but if you go out and try to do that right now, you're going to get injured. Like you need to ease your body back in. Now it's going to be easier than the first time that you did it, but you're still going to have to take time for those systems to regain that efficiency. So, you know, you're going to feel probably after a week or two that cardio wise, you can do that. But, you know, the rest of you, your musculoskeletal system needs to catch up. I mean, and it's going to take some time. People want to, I have a client right now. I think that's one of the things that we're working on. And this particular person wants to compare, you know, 5 years ago to right now, and is being hyper analytical about stride length. And, well, I looked at my Garmin data and this and this and this. And I'm like, well, okay. But what I would be looking at is you can try to alter all of these things. All you're going to do is hurt yourself because you're trying to change something unnaturally and too quickly. And really, you just need to put in the time. I mean, back, you know, at the time that this person is looking at, they were looking at data of when they were running 30, 40, 50 miles a week. Well, now we're doing 16. So, okay, we got to put in the time. I mean, people always want to think that it's something more than that, but a lot, it's repetition. It's reps. It's, you have to do it.
Yeah. And that brings up another good point. These 1%, you know, people don't want to waste their time, quote unquote, waste their time, right? They don't want to make a small change. They need to make a big change and things have to happen and they have to see it happen or whatever. But to that point, you will see it happen with consistency of those 1% adding up. It's not a big 180 overnight. It's 1% for a lot of time that add up to 180 over time. And that time that you put in, that consistent work every single day for these little tiny habits, that's what really adds up and makes it worthwhile. But you have to be willing to put that in. You can't compare to 5 years ago. Data has changed. Science has changed. The way things track have changed. Even if you're using the same Garmin, things change. Yeah. So, I mean, all of that data is going to be, it's useful to see, oh, that's where I came from. And you can, you know, get close to that. But it's that time.
Right. And there was also like people, you know, if you're going to be working with me, well, I don't know who you were working with a couple of years ago, and I don't know what their coaching style was or if you were self-coached or whatever, but you obviously hit a certain point where you weren't able to go any further. So, I mean, you can look at that, but that's not where we are right now. And I think that's a big thing just, and I want to kind of go on a, not really a tangent, but something that's tying in is that people that are not athletic and don't define themselves as athletes often are not as used to the skill of grounding themselves in the present moment. Whereas I think that we all would agree that mindfulness and often prayer with athletes is important to bring yourself present, bring yourself to the right now. And the right now is where everything is happening. And a lot of people that aren't in that world aren't practiced in that. So there's a lot of trying to remind people to return to the present. And novices especially, I deal with that.
So what are some ways that you personally try to stay in the present? Just kind of keep yourself grounded and remind yourself that you're still on a journey yourself.
Well, you know, I am committed to taking at least three small actions every day. And it doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's a small action that moves towards something that I want. And so that with my running, I have been very cognizant of making sure, because there were times where I was just mindlessly running. And now every run has a specific purpose. And I do allow myself to just fuck off. But I like to, every run does have a specific purpose. I meditate every day. sometimes more than once a day. And that is also really important for me to have that quiet where I can listen to what's happening in the present, to be able to go inward and to hear my own voice rather than be consumed with things that are happening outside. I try to remind myself not to fall into traps. I started at the end of last year following some athletes on Strava that were running, oh my God, conversation pace 6:30.
Hey, that's not me.
6 minutes. Nope. And I'm just, and I'm thinking, okay, that's not me. And you know,
Is that you?
It's not me. And you get to this point where you start to feel an inadequacy. And I just have to tell myself, you know what, if I start to feel the inadequacy, I am not going to look at that. And I think that it's important to look forward. But when you start to, when I start to take myself and get outside of myself and start to believe that I need to be so much further ahead than I am, then what happens? I start being foolish. I start doing stupid things. I mean, I start trying to push myself too hard in ways, and then I return to the present. Okay, where am I? What's a small action that I can take to get 1 degree, shift 1 degree, and just the 1% better every day? Kind of like the James Clear Atomic Habits. Love that book. It's been really influential for me. Read it way after I should have read it. But once I read it, I had already started this process, and I was like,
now.
It's really useful. Yeah.
What are some of the, I mean, you just mentioned this too, but like you said, trap, right? You fell into the trap of like following other runners or following other people in your space and realizing that that was a negative, that was impacting you negatively. So how do you identify a trap, either for yourself or for your clients?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think that anything that a trap like that would be anything that makes you feel like you're not enough, like where you are isn't enough because you are like where you are. If you can't be happy with where you are right now, you're not going to move any further because you're always going to feel like you have lack. And so you're always going to feel like you are not good enough to be performing at what you're performing. So how are you going to be able to move forward? And I have goals. I have goals that I want to achieve within, well, I don't even really give myself time frames, but I definitely have goals that I want to achieve. And I don't feel like I'm not enough because I haven't achieved them. And if I find myself in a position where I'm starting to feel that, then I take a step back. And I tell people to do that as well. Like people, especially newer runners, they're running slowly and they're feeling bad. Like they should be going quicker. And it's like, no, you don't need to be going quicker. You're going to. It's going to happen for you. But you can't, if you're going to hate where you're at right now, you're going to hate every single time you go out to do this. Every single time is going to be miserable. You're never going to find joy in it. You have to live where you are at right now. You have to be okay with that and find joy in it.
No, I really enjoyed what you said because, you know, I think there's obviously, we call them traps, right? And this is the mental game that you play every single time you want to make a commitment to better yourself, right? Because at the end of the day, you want to be, you have this image of who you want to be, whether it's, you know, aesthetically or just personally, right? Professionally, you know, the whole nine yards, right? And I think we all define success. And I say all the time, you know, the fitness aspect is relative because it's all personalized to the person themselves, right? And I really enjoy the fact, you know, that I didn't realize, and you know, this, you mentioned coming up across something, you know, later in life, right? I didn't realize that actually getting up and going to the gym first thing in the morning, as much as I heard it all the time, right, was actually the most beneficial for me for that exact reason. It was able to ground me and it was able to give me something to strive at. As you continue on your journey here, because obviously we're never done. You mentioned your goals, whether they have timelines or anything like that. Where do you ultimately see yourself now that you've made this commitment and you're deep into it? Where ultimately do you see taking this and you know, how many people do you want to affect change on? Like, Do you have any of those defined numbers? Or I have the feeling I know the answer to this question because of your mood. It's just kind of go with the flow. But is it just to kind of go with the flow and see what happens day by day? Or do you have kind of that set vision of who you want to be when all is said and done?
You know what? I will tell you that I'm perfectly happy with who I am right now. But what I do value in life, I've made a lot of realizations over the last year through COVID because I've had a lot of time to think. And oh my God. It's been wonderful.
A lot of time to do a lot of things.
It has been wonderful. It has been a gift in ways that I can't even describe this beautiful gift from the universe. And I want to be able to help as many people as I can to be able to break those pieces free so they can start moving in whatever direction that they want to go. And if it's something that I can help them with directly, great. If I need to refer them to somebody else, great. But I just want to be able to help people start following their own path towards what makes them truly happy and where they want to go. And as for me, my ideal life, honestly, I want to work for myself, and I would love to not have a home at all. And I would love to be a vagabond who lives out of Motel Sixes somewhere in the mountain time zone, preferably Arizona, New Mexico, but that's probably not going to happen.
We got to manifest this. You want it to happen. It's going to be Arizona, New Mexico. I'm going to come and visit you in a Motel Six. I'm going to remind you of this moment.
You know, we got to write it down. But seriously, though, I really just want to live with – I live a very minimalist lifestyle. I live in a 90-square-foot apartment in New York City, and I've lived in that apartment. It'll be 11 years next month.
I'm sorry. Rewind. 90? 90.
I can actually – I wish there was video on this podcast. You guys can't see it. And I don't have a kitchen. So here's an interesting thing. I don't have a kitchen. So I have had to figure out how to be able to fuel my body without a kitchen for 13 years because I didn't have a kitchen in my last place either. So when people come to me with, I don't have time to cook, I say, well, interestingly enough, you don't need time to cook because
I see your excuse and I'm throwing it out the window.
Absolutely. Let me introduce you to Trader Joe's. They sell broccoli in a bag. You can toss it in your microwave. But seriously, though, so it's been – I live a pretty minimalist lifestyle, and I would love to – which sounds weird, but I would love to downsize that a lot more if I could and just –
I'm so stuck on this. I think I could fit like 9 of your apartments in my home. Like, seriously, like this. I don't even know where I would put all of my gym equipment, let alone my dog. Like, my dog has to be there, so if something else has to go.
Finnegan cannot fit in here. I do not have enough floor space for Finnegan. I don't. I do not. I have met Finnegan. Finnegan cannot fit in here. But, you know, it's about like also the idea of, okay, like during COVID, just getting outside, and because I can't exercise here. So I have to exercise outdoors or at the gym. And, you know, when gyms were closed, it was about going down to East River Park and exercising outside and doing bodyweight exercises. And it was a lot.
I want to bring this up because it was so impactful to me watching it happen over the course of COVID. But on your Instagram, you did this reflect series where you would take a picture like every day or week, right? Where you were like, there was some sort of reflection of you on your walk or run. Can you talk a little bit about like what that turned into and like what that now means to you?
Oh my God. That was powerful. And it started in early COVID. So what happened was I was working in a job that I couldn't stand with a lot of people who also couldn't stand it. And it was abusive and it was kind of running us ragged. It was very physical. And then it was the day before St. Patrick's Day that New York City shut down, like essential businesses only. And there was a mass exodus, like people that were from somewhere else left. And the city was just quiet. And I started journaling every day about what I saw. And one of the days I wrote in the journal entries, I couldn't resist taking photographs of myself in lifeless windows. And it was about, because for me, I knew that it was much larger than just the city is shut down. this is something different. For me, it was a time of transition. It was a time of transition in my personal life because at the time I wasn't certified as a running coach. I had not started my business. I had not started writing, blogging regularly. I had not started podcasting. I had not started working with clients. I hadn't started any of this shit. But I knew where I wanted to go. And so I knew that it was a time of transition for me. I knew it was a time of transition for our society. I knew it was a time of transition for New York. And everything was just so quiet. And I would just take every day. And I was doing a run streak at the time, which I have since realized is not smart. Just because you end up sacrificing workouts you should be doing for the sake of exercising when you're tired. And I could go on, but I won't. But so it started with the run streak of just, I was taking pictures of myself during the run streak. And then it started with, I was feeling different things. Like as the days were going on, there were different aspects of me that were changing. And sometimes I would write little captions about what those were. And then a friend of mine started a community revolving around mindfulness, and I met all of these interesting people that I had never really known. And so we started talking more about going inward and realizing your spiritual energy and realizing that your body is a vehicle for your spirit and your body is a temple and your body carries you through life, but you are energy. And so it just became such a deep thing. And after about a year, I kind of came to not finality, but kind of a realization about what all of that meant. And I started being able to see more, I guess, more congruency with in the mirror what I was seeing. And so I saw when I was looking at myself, I saw what I wanted to see. And in the reality is from the beginning to the end, I looked exactly the same. But I didn't see what I wanted to see in the beginning. And at the end, I did. And so now I want to put together some writing on it, but it's so emotional. Such an emotional thing that I haven't been able to really explore it too deeply yet. But yeah, that was Reflect. Project Reflect. Hashtag Reflect.
Hashtag Reflect. Hashtag
Reflect.
Yeah.
Just real quick, because I think just kind of the way you spoke about it a little bit and where you're, obviously you mentioned your goals are, it's really centered around kind of that minimalist, you know, lifestyle. And to me, the way you just spoke about your workouts and keeping a minimalist lifestyle, it's almost as though it drives you to stay on a path. Would you say that's correct? And if so, how do you utilize that to kind of keep yourself motivated as you go along?
I think that for me, running and having my body be capable of doing the things I want it to do, moves me forward in a way that it is a way for me to connect with myself and my breath and be able to and to stay present. I'm terrible. I do so little strength as most a lot of people that are obsessed with cardio tend to avoid. Not everyone, not the people that I'm currently talking to, but like you guys seem to be very well, very balanced athletes. Whereas like I know a lot of runners that say, I hate exercise. And like they'll run 10 miles a day, but they hate exercise because they don't do the workouts that say you guys do.
That's not to say I don't feel out of place though with two runners on this podcast right now. I'm not gonna lie. I feel like I'm just the guy in the corner, honestly, you know, with two runners.
You run now.
I run a mile a week. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves now, okay?
Still counts as running.
It's okay, it's running. I'll give you that. But I mean it's not as do you see all the medals she's got hanging on her wall? Subtle flex.
I know that's so intimidating. Like
she's got all her medals hanging back there. She just got me like, hey, I'm a competitive runner, by the way.
I'm
surprised Sean hasn't gone through her collection yet. Just started putting them in the background.
I feel like, because I know I follow Sean on Instagram, and I think to myself every time, Sean, I always think, oh my God, I need to do more strength. I need to do more strength. And then that was a huge tangent. But I mean, so workouts, if there is strength, it's just to supplement running. And running is just something that keeps me so present and keeps me so grounded. It keeps me feeling so good. And I just, it's a vehicle. It's a vehicle because before it, I never was able to see life in a way that had any positivity. I mean, I grew up in a, and I love my family, but I grew up in an environment where I was taught that life was hard and the way that you dealt with the hard was to medicate it with alcohol or cigarettes or being mad or something like that. And running was the first thing that I ever did where I was able to develop this positivity and this, these positive coping strategies to deal with anxiety and deal with all this. So I have to, yeah, grounds me.
I love that though. And I think, I mean, when I was a runner and like, I will make this very clear. When I was a runner, I did not do resistance training. And then that had led me into like all of these, like wanting to be a coach and understand resistance training. And like everyone has their why, right? Everyone has their reason. But when I was running, I was such a runner that I had my run streak too. And then I learned the hard way, like why run streaks aren't great. Or I wanted to run faster and farther and like push my limits. And then I was like, all right, well, this is boring now. Now what do I do? Right. So it's like, you have to find the thing that drives you. And like running is that for you right now. I keep that, love that, but protect that and like add in some resistance training, Andy.
I know. And it's something that I'm working on. I am fully aware of it. It's so nice to hear that at some point, because we're so guilty of this, right? We're so guilty of looking at other people and saying and thinking that they always were where they are. And so for me to hear someone like you say, hey, when I was a runner, you know, I was so focused just on this, and to know where you are now, it makes me realize. And I know that people follow journeys. I know that people follow paths. And but sometimes it's nice to be reminded, like, this person also walked a series of small steps over time. And so I try, and I'm sure you guys do as well with your clients. I try to just show all the vulnerability. I know you do, Sean. I've seen so much of it on your Instagram. And Dan, I don't know you, but I'm sure you also, I mean, with your clients.
We did talk about it a little bit last week when we got into the empathy versus sympathy discussion where Dan, you know, he really is passionate about about showing up, right? And really listening and caring about other people and not just like judging them for, you know, where they are in a certain moment, but, you know, understanding who they are and what drives them and why. And instead of giving sympathy, we give empathy. So, and I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the things that ties together so many great coaches in my life is that idea of being able to be vulnerable enough in your own life that you can see that. Because you can't be standoffish and say, oh, I have empathy for these other people, right? You can't. You have to be vulnerable at some point. You have to understand that aspect of it before you can be a good coach to somebody else.
And I think too, to a certain degree, one thing to understand in that is a lot of times when judgment comes, it's really a reflection of insecurities, right? Like a lot of times when you have somebody who's negative or reflecting negative thoughts to you, I understand that it's tough to realize it, but they probably have something deep in their own mind that they can't quite get over. And so I think as coaches, for us to be vulnerable, one, it's kind of a slap in the face to those negative people because it throws them off when you're just kind of like, yeah, that's me in a nutshell. Yeah, I have all these failures, if you will, but, you know, I'm dealing with them and moving forward, right? As opposed to, you know, letting them kind of affect your mentality. But two, to show that same person that, hey, like, it's okay. You could judge me because I've had the same judgments and I've had the same thoughts that you've had in your head. Difference is I project them in different ways.
Mm-hmm. I've learned from them.
Right.
Absolutely. And I've dealt with a situation recently with a client. And I've dealt with this situation so many times. Because I think you guys know we've talked about it so far in the podcast is that I have a strong background in customer service before I got into training people. So, you know, coaching people running and anything else. And a lot of times in that environment, people come at you with such negativity right at the outset. And it has nothing to do with you. I worked in a restaurant in Times Square. And so they are overwhelmed, sensory overload, exhausted, spending too much money, lost, have been, you know, harassed, and then they're hungry. So they come in and it's just this stuff that they just project it all on you. It's just, and when I come in, when I run into that situation with clients, because it happens, it's just being able to neutralize that and not let it affect me personally, because it's not personal, but just letting them be safe in that. And then when I think the time is appropriate, we can, and they realize it's okay, then we can revisit and say, okay, so yesterday it seemed like you were feeling like this. Let me tell you, that's totally normal. What you're going through and what you're perceiving as this big failure is actually just totally normal. And you're right where you need to be. And here's a small thing that you can do that we can work on for you to move forward in this particular way. So I try to yeah, do that.
I like that tie too, to kind of like the customer service, particularly, you know, you want to talk about how we label people, you know, Karens, you know, people who want to speak to the manager, so on and so forth. Right. And like, you know, it's kind of the realm to a certain degree, you know, that we live in. And the way I look at it is like you just said, right? Somebody's had a bad day. And for some reason, you were just literally at that point where it was just perfect for them to unload on you. And I always love to kind of see that, like you said, from a coaching perspective, but also even sometimes it was amusing to me in doing sales, direct sales, customer service, you know, in my time post-college, and just, you know, watching the mood kind of change as they begin to just unload, right? And they're just sitting there and they're just like, like, you don't even, you don't listen to them, right? You're just like, yeah, okay, great. Uh-huh, I understand you're upset. Yeah, you don't even know what they're actually saying. And then all of a sudden, it's just like the faucet just starts to slowly turn off, and then they just get less and less heated. And then all of a sudden, by the time you're done, it's taken a little while, but you're actually just having a full-on conversation with them. They're face-to-face with you and they're completely calm. And I think that's a real projection where, like you said, dealing with that in customer service, it allows you, or certain industries, it allows you to just kind of understand that people's feelings at the forefront may not be exactly truly how they're feeling overall. And you really kind of have to take how they're saying something sometimes, or even what they're saying, I should say, with a grain of salt. It is more kind of how they're saying it. I remember one of the first times I was in sales and I was training somebody at a 90-year-old man. We were selling DirecTV and Costco, right? We're not the most favorite people in there. So I said good morning to this guy. Before I even try to go into my sales pitch, he says, fuck you, and keeps walking. Like, straight up just looks me in the face and says, fuck you, and keeps walking. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And the guy I was training with, who's actually a close personal friend of mine now, was just like, what? And like, I grew up in New York, right? You don't take that. You don't take that at all, right? Also 90 years old. Like, what am I going to do to the guy? Honestly, you know? But he was just, he was almost astounded with the way I reacted, where I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Because in the back of my mind, again, it's like, that guy's having a bad day and I just happened to be there to project it on him. So when you do come from a level of coaching, if you do get into those, and I know you hit on it a little bit, but like, how do you go about trying to keep people to remember that maybe those emotions that they're feeling in that time aren't just in that moment? It could have been built up, you know, getting to realize that all of that could be from a really, really deep down area where maybe some changes haven't been made yet.
Oh, that's hard. I mean, I think that you can only speak to people when they are ready, willing, and able to hear you. So if somebody...
One more time for the people in the back. Right? One more time.
They have to be ready, willing, and able to hear you. And if they're not, let's say that we're having an exchange via, you know, via text or via whatever, or via phone call or we're in person and they can't, and I know that they are not going to receive the information, I will wait until I know they can receive it. And I also did training for many, many years for my company. I used to open stores, and I know when people are, and you know, I know when people are receiving information. So if they're not receiving it, I won't deliver it. And I will wait till a time when they can. In the interim, I will just work with whatever the situation is at that moment. So the situation is, okay, we're doing whatever that situation happens to be. I can't force someone to make progress at a time that they're not ready. And I think trying to often will alienate you, get you ghosted. I mean, people will withdraw. It will make you ineffective. So I definitely practice the let's assess and see.
I think the piece of that that's so interesting as a coach is that, and I've been here as an athlete, right? Like you have that really, really bad day where like your workout went south, your nutrition is off, you didn't recover well in your sleep, like all this stuff, da 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 da, down and down and down and down. But when you're in customer service or you're a coach, right? It doesn't matter your personal, right? You have to be professional for that other person. So you could have had the worst day literally ever, but that person is coming to you and they had the worst day ever in their life. So now they're coming to you as a professional and you have to leave all of your shit at the door because you're expected to have that kind of like forward thinking. Okay, this has nothing to do with me. You had a bad day. Totally get it. My bad day has nothing to do with you, but let me just tell you about, you know, let's be vulnerable together, right? Like, I'm so sorry that your day was like that, but we have a choice right now to make that different, right? And again, not everybody's ready to hear that. Sometimes they just need to go off, right? And then they feel better after that, to Dan's point. But sometimes when you can get them in that right frame of mind and be able to have a really constructive conversation after, that can completely change the way that they see everything from there on forward.
Absolutely. 1,000%.
Yeah, and I really like what you just said there, Sean, because I think in any situation, right, you have a decision, you know, and I think that ultimately kind of ties and brings full circle kind of your story, Andy, right? At the end of the day, like there was a decision that was made, you know. I think it's funny you mentioned how kind of overnight you started to, you know, increase your running pace and your length of your runs were, and then like to you, it just kind of happened like that. But you know, you're kind of at that point, just removed from the process itself a little bit, you know, the initial process, right? After you get so deep into it. But it does feel like when you look back on it, that it did kind of happen overnight, because in the grand spectrum, it was what, maybe a year out of, you know, 4 or 5 total years that you've been working at this and so on. And, you know, I just love that point to be made, is, you know, to let everybody understand that we all take in life differently, right? And so we all get to choose basically from either learned behavior or behavior we're trying to, you know, correct or just in the moment. We all have a choice to actually change our lives, our days, and, you know, ultimately just bring ourselves happiness. Because again, happiness is a relative term to everybody. And, you know, you can't just say, oh, I'm happy. And, you know, people will say, oh, you know, I'm happy for the exact same reason that everybody else is happy, right? I'm happy. My happiness is completely different from you too. Basically, you know, what I'm getting at is really the idea of that point that, you know, there's that choice. There's that decision that needs to be made if ultimately you want to make that 1 degree better, 1% better every single day. But the initial choice has to be made for you to start that process.
And you need to be able to see yourself as, you need to be able to see, and I tell people this all the time, and this is a lot of my work, just, I want to just touch on it briefly, is just seeing yourself as the thing before you are the thing, and being able to shift your identity into what you want to be. So getting rid of your limiting beliefs, because they're useless, and that is something that's going to hold you back. But also, you know, people that are moving from being really, really unathletic, they not only have limiting beliefs, but a lot of times they have ties to their social circles, their friendships, the activities that they do that might not be serving them. And they think that those are things that make them who they are. And it's about the willingness to realize that that is not what makes you who you are. Mm. And you can incorporate new things. And just because you like to party and drink doesn't mean that you can't also be an athlete. Like, and it doesn't mean that that defines you. And it doesn't mean that if you do a little bit less of that and you do a little bit more of this, that you're going to all of a sudden not be you and you're going to be lost. Like, that's just not the case. So a lot of the, just kind of touching on, you know, being willing to change also is the ability to resonate with being able to resonate with the new lifestyle and being able to incorporate that as part of you before it manifests, before it actually happens, and accept that it is you before you see it in the mirror, before you see yourself doing the thing. And it's huge. Absolutely huge.
It's a decision to want to be what you started out thinking you can't be, right? It's a decision to see yourself in a different way than maybe the rest of the world or even yourself currently thinks about it, being able to reframe that and say, that's what I want to be. I can be that. I will be that. And it's those 1 degree shifts each time that gets you there.
Mm-hmm. And you have to reach out to people that can help you. And the people, and I said this week, the people that are closest to you in your life, they might support you all the time. They might not be your biggest supporters, even if they've been your biggest supporter up until now, even if they've been your biggest fan until yesterday, they might be a roadblock. And you have to be able to realize that you have to see yourself through it. And eventually those people will catch up. But remember, you've seen yourself as something that they haven't seen you as yet. So a lot of times people get discouraged, like, oh, my friends don't really understand this thing that I'm doing. And, you know, they try to talk me out of, oh, well, you know, I want to go for my, I have this to do, but they're trying to, you know, make me do this or bring me back into this. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, but they're eventually going to catch on to what you're doing, but you have to see it through before anybody else is going to see you go in that way.
And that's got to cause some obstacles for you when coaching people. Am I wrong? Because like, depending on how important, right, that person is, because like you just said, we're very influenced by others' opinions, right? And some opinions may weigh higher than others, right? Let's say a parent or someone like that, right? And then you also mentioned actually how someone might just not be willing to listen, right? Does that cause some complications for you when trying to understand, like, is this person going to really understand that this person so meaningful to them is actually a roadblock? Will they actually listen to me? You know, will they accept it? Will they actually move on from this negativity that's actually being caused?
You know, I think it depends on the person and it depends on the situation. And I do my best. And I had a friend tell me that when she was studying a foreign language in graduate school, they said that the person's ability to pick up that to be able to acquire the skills to speak another language really depended on how much they resonated with the host country of what that language was. So I think it's a lot of it has to do with the fact of, can the person see themselves as part of the culture and can they want that? And I can try to make them want it. But if they don't want it, then there's only so much I can do. I mean, I can try to paint it in any positive light. I can try to show the best sides of anything that anyone is trying to do. But if they don't want it, and if they don't see themselves as that, and they are allowing their old life to take back over, because a lot of times when people, particularly when they're stressed or when they're tired, will fall back into old patterns of thinking. Like they have a subset, a program that their body runs. And so when they're stressed, they all of a sudden stop waking up early. They find themselves staying up working until midnight and then sleeping too late and then skipping their workouts because they slept too late. And then they're tired because they haven't worked out in 3 days. So then they start eating shitty food because they're tired. And then they ate the shitty food. And so now they feel even worse. So then they're having a couple of beers instead of – and then, it's the downward spiral. You try to stop somebody and try to get them back into the present and say, hey, what you really want is this, because remember where you were at this time. Like, you really want this. And you can try. But if they don't resonate with that, and if they can't make themselves want it and they can't bring themselves to see that side that they want to be on the other side of it, Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. So, and I don't always succeed. I do a lot, but I don't always.
As a coach, I can totally relate. And I know Dan and I have had this conversation so many times, but what it comes down to, honestly, is that they have to understand their own why. We have to know it as a coach to be able to remind them of their quote unquote why. And once they get to that point where they've fallen off the wagon and they're not even running alongside it anymore, it's like, you know, on the next block or whatever, right? The wagon is long gone. If we can remind them of what their why is, another cart comes along and they can jump back on that wagon, right? Mm-hmm. It's not ever too far gone if their why is easy for them to relate to because it's theirs instead of ours.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you say that because I think a lot of times people don't know what their why is. I think they think sometimes that it's something outside of them, like I want to be, you know, something, whatever. But your why is usually, the podcast people can't see where I'm touching my chest, but it's here. It's inside of you. I mean, it's something that you know, and it's something that you know intimately. And I think just being able to bring people to that place where they can figure it out and see it. And because another wagon will be coming and you'll be able to get on that. Like it, you, okay, so we had a setback. Cool. Me too. 100 of them. Get right back on it, you know?
Yep. It's just that it's a setback. It doesn't have to be the quitting time. It doesn't have to be the finish line. This isn't where you are, you know, are drowning alone and at sea. This is just where you're realizing that it's hard work and it's okay to have setbacks. It's okay to not succeed on your first try. And in fact, that's encouraged, right? Because if you are always succeeding and never failing, you're never really learning anything. You're just continuing to make changes. So that first failure, that first setback, those first 100 setbacks are really just lessons. They're just teaching you to continue to strive to be better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the next 100 are just there to test you to see if you really still want it. You know, I mean, ultimately, like you're going to get tested at every level, no matter what. It's just, I feel,
yeah.
And it's something that you and I have talked about a lot, Sean. You know, I guess when you look at it from a certain level of let's utilize fitness, right? Like, we still get tested, and quite honestly, compared to somebody who's maybe just starting, our tests come in sometimes a little bit harder than those who have just begun, right? Just because of the fact that we've committed for so long that if there's that day where you just don't have it, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, we do go into this.
Everybody
Everybody has that day.
Yeah. Right. And you know, it's constantly what we talk about, changing that stigma where like you only see what's right, you know, what's good out of what we do.
Right.
It's that moment where you're deciding to feel the feeling now and then let it go. You can be upset. You can have a bad moment, but 60 seconds of your day doesn't make your day bad. It makes those 60 seconds really fucking suck. And then the rest of your day can be awesome because you got that out of the way. Even if you only have like 4 hours left in your day, you can have a great 4 hours. But comparing those 60 seconds that are bad to anybody else's 60 seconds that were bad, it's always going to be different. And your path is not parallel to anybody else's. So you just have to, your 60 seconds today maybe is worse than your 60 seconds yesterday, but you can still have an amazing day outside of that.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. Because you know what? If you don't do that, then you're just reliving. And as you and I have talked about this, your body doesn't know the damn difference between something bad that's happening right now and your thoughts about something bad that has happened in the past. And if you're just throwing yourself back into that, then what's happening? You're putting yourself through that cycle of, okay, this is terrible, this is terrible, this is terrible. And then down the rabbit hole you go. And so, yeah.
So deep. Like, goodbye.
So deep.
Parachute off, like you're gone.
Yep.
Look, you know, Sean, I had to text you last week because I knew, shameless plug for my strength and conditioning classes on Wednesdays on Facebook. But I just knew I didn't have it last week, right? Like straight up, just mentally, I'd been tested all day, right? And I think one thing that I want to harp on as well, and if maybe this gears the conversation a little bit closer to that, of kind of deciding when you don't have it in a day. Cause I think we've all talked about it before. That's dangerous as well, right? Sometimes, like you said, you may go to run just to, you know, just for, I don't, maybe you're not running as hard as you normally do. Maybe you're just doing it to say you did it. I've had those lifts before, right? Or these workouts where, you know, hey, we still need to get into it, but we're probably not going to get the best workout out of it just because we don't have 100%.
I make that decision when I say the words, I hate this. And I'm at a point in my journey with this where I don't hate this. I love it. I love it every single day. And if I have a day where I say, I hate this, that we stop. And we stop till we don't hate it anymore. And usually that's 2 or 3 days. Usually sometimes it's only one day. But if day two comes and I still hate it, then we stop for day two. And because I'm not falling off any wagons at this point. I'm an athlete. Like it's not like with beginners where it's about making them do it and making them want to do it. I'm at a point where you guys are probably at where it's almost like pulling teeth to get you to not do it. You know, like you feel like you need to do it even when you're so up, like when you're so, you know, you shouldn't. And you're like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it today. Even though, and that happened to me in February, I think I was about 2 weeks into February. I'm like, no, I can't do this. I hate this. I have hate right now for this. And I had to take days off. And yeah, it'll resume. I mean, it will resume when it does. And it's never been an issue. It's not something that, because it's too important to me in my life. My why is too important to me. So I am practiced in returning to that. So I'll do other things too. And I'm very good at listening to my body. And I'm sure, and I know that the two of you are as well. And for anybody that's listening, your body will tell you what it needs. So a random diet won't tell you what it needs.
You do have to listen to it though.
You have to listen.
you have to listen to what it's telling you.
And if it's telling you that you need sleep, then you need to sleep. And if it's telling you that you're dehydrated, then you are. And if it's telling you because you've been so busy with 5,000 things that you need to do, that you need to just turn your brain off and not engage intellectually, then you do. But there has to be periods of rest, and you don't adapt to your fitness or to anything if you don't give yourself a break every now and again. And a break is part of progress. And I think when you get to be like us, sometimes you forget that because we don't like breaks because we're on our way to these great big things. Right, but right. We don't like breaks, but breaks are important.
But that also stems from the point that you said where, you know, like there's the passion, there's the love for it, right? So when there's a love for it, there sometimes is going to be that hate for a little while. And so I think for us now, the three of us here, it's kind of like when we actually have to accept that we don't have it for that day, it's tough because the love is there and you have to literally hate the fact that you're hating what you love so much. I think
it's a difference between distaste and like hate and lack of motivation. So there are days where I have lack of motivation where I can motivate myself. And then there are days when I have the, I hate this. And the, I hate this is the rarity. Like that's the exception to the rule. That's the once in a while. Right. And that's the day that I take a rest day. And it's so rare. Lack of motivation every fucking morning. Like, what are you talking about?
Until coffee.
Yeah.
Until coffee, exactly.
Yeah. I was literally clapping in the background when you said the hate thing because that's so real. And I think that's something everyone, even beginners, can literally, if you just started working out yesterday, you can still identify a difference between lack of motivation and hate for something. You don't hate your trainer. You don't hate going to the gym. You might hate sweating and you might be uncomfortable with where you're at and want to be in a different place. But if you hate the gym, you hate your trainer, you hate all of the things around everything that you're supposed to be doing that day, that's a rest day. It's not, you know, your hatred of discomfort. That's different. But that one piece of I hate everything, that feeling, that gut feeling, is really where you stop. Your gut is telling you to stop and you need to take that break and give yourself that grace, which gets harder the longer you do it, right? Saying, I hate this. I love running, but I absolutely got to a place where I hated it because I had to do it. And the minute that happened, I was out.
Yep.
Absolutely. But also, like, as you dive in, And if you can commit to something, right, and that's, again, something, Sean, you and I have talked about a lot, right, just finding something that you can commit to and begin to fall in love with, those days of distaste, those days of hate, those periods you said maybe 2 or 3 days now, they're not week long, right? But in the beginning, they may very be week long, right? You may for a week say, I hate running. Good. Don't do it every day, right? Do it a couple days so you begin to realize, okay, maybe I don't hate it as much as I just really don't like it when I have to do it constantly. And like you just said, Sean, have to do it, right? I just, you know, I love that aspect too, because for me, and speaking again, just on weight training, that's something that happened to me consistently. I would take weeks off, and sometimes there were 2 weeks off. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, it's a month, right? Where now mornings, if I even think for a quick second, like, oh, I don't want to go today, I have someone else coming into my head. I don't know who. I don't know who this guy is. I don't know where he came from. But he's like, nah, no. Your eyes are open. You've got up this morning. You're not going back into bed. Just go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
absolutely.
That's knowing to listen to your body. That's recognizing cues that you want to do something. That's the motivation piece, right? And that's your head saying, listen, your knees feel fine. Your back is great. Your core might be sore, but let's go. Get some water in. Let's get some nutrition and let's fucking go.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make that PB&J and let's hit the fucking road, champ. That's what I say to myself every morning. Those are the exact words.
I think I'm going to steal
that. You do. Absolutely. I might as well. I can make that PB&J without the kitchen.
No kitchen. You got this.
Yeah. So what do you cook on? Like, do you use an iron, some hotel, you know, like situation? Like,
You are like a modern day MacGyver to me right now. I'm so fascinated by this.
There is a lot of Whole Foods. So I live in New York. So it's very easy to get things that are pre-prepared for you. I became an expert label reader, so I don't eat a lot of packaged food, but if you go to Whole Foods, they sell the $12 meal where you can get the grilled salmon and the sweet potatoes and the Brussels sprouts for $12. And then there's a lot of, I shop at Trader Joe's. I don't eat a lot of fancy food because I can't. I'm pretty familiar with what restaurants I can order from. A little bit more expensive. There are delis. I eat a lot of eggs.
Eggs are delicious.
I eat a lot of eggs. I got to pay a lot of money for eggs. I got to pay a lot of money for cooked eggs. You can go to Trader Joe's. You can get a bag of 6 hard-boiled eggs for like $3. Can't hard-boil my own eggs. I have to pay somebody else to do it. So there's that. There are places like Chopped and Sweet Green, which offer things that are really healthy, salads and things like that.
The challenge of being resourceful is interesting because it's not like I also live in a city, but I live in Raleigh. So it's definitely different than the middle of New York City. And I have a kitchen that I use like twice a week to meal prep, right? And do exactly what you're doing. But instead of buying it from somewhere, I just have it in my kitchen to heat up. But the resourcefulness of it all and saying like, it is easy probably to eat just like packaged foods, right? If you don't have a kitchen, like super easy to grab something off the shelf, but you're not doing that. You're being resourceful. And I think that's
I just can't do it. I don't eat packaged foods that have more than 5 ingredients in them. I mean, sometimes, but people don't really understand that there are so many preservatives and so many things. So it's, unfortunately, the problem is that when you live like I do, it is expensive. That's a problem, but that's a problem with America. Like, it's a problem. It's expensive to buy food that isn't processed when you're not cooking for yourself. And
I literally have this conversation with every one of my clients and it bugs the crap out of me that it's so expensive to eat, right?
It's so expensive. It is. But I am willing. I mean, I'm willing because right now I'm in a rent-controlled apartment and I don't have a utility bill. So to move to get the kitchen would be more expensive than to just do what I'm doing. Of course, I would like to have a kitchen. I would, because it's really expensive to buy sweet potatoes that somebody else cooked for you when you can just buy a sweet potato for a fucking dollar. You know, like you get – it's really – it's a pain. But you have to be willing. And the way that I look at it is – okay, like food is fuel. I have to fuel my body. I can't not fuel my body or I'm not going to be able to do the things that I want to do. And So I do. And if I get sick of eating the same five things, which I do, then okay, then I'll order something that is maybe not so, maybe I'll get pad thai this week. Like, okay, but I'll just do that once a week. It's not every day, you know, and it's just because I also try to avoid things like enriched wheat flour and things like that. And not because I'm intolerant of those things. I guess everybody kind of is intolerant to enriched wheat flour, if you think about it. Yeah, everybody is. But I do, I avoid them. But I do, I try to keep things as healthy as possible. And there are lots of things that seem kind of poverty-ish, but there is nothing wrong with cans of tuna. I don't care. I'm about it. I mean, it's a quick source of protein.
I buy a bag of tuna. So we're in the same boat. I'm here like, you know, in the middle of meetings, like with a fork and a bag of tuna, just enjoying it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's so, because it's important. And then and if it's important to you, then you're going to make it a priority. And I would like people to, I would like people that are looking to, are unhappy with their bodies to just realize that if you look at food as fuel for your body, and you guys are, I am not trying to preach to the choir because you guys are the experts on this, but I mean, just being able to see that for some of these people that are so new to this it's challenging, and it's challenging to get them to see fuel, see food as fuel instead of some sort of, you know, we that would be two podcast episodes worth of material that we would have to talk about to get into.
And
that.
Talk about it, we will, because oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
Well, and you know, there's a lot that we can unpack there, and I think you, for me, may have earned yourself a ticket back by calling us experts. Thank you for stroking my ego. made me feel good on the day. But I want to touch on a point that you made that I think is huge, right? Again, we go back to decisions and we go back to the willingness, right? Because I'd imagine that a good majority of people in your situation in America would see flutters of fast food bags all over the apartment because, well, that's easiest, right? The excuse being, well, I don't have a kitchen, so I got to get somebody to cook it for me. Like you said, right? But not making the decision to go for something that's still healthier in that degree and actually getting somebody to just whip it up real quick because it gets delivered to your front door. And then, you know, you eat it very quickly and it's all processed. It's fast food, so on and so forth. And, you know, I really like that point of, again, just always just all I'm hearing throughout this whole conversation is deciding and, you know, being willing to just, you know, do things that most people aren't going to do to ultimately find your inner peace and your happiness. And I think that for me is where a lot of taking it in, the inspiration of your story comes from, is again, the decision to really make what seems like a completely drastic change. Again, over years' time, it didn't happen overnight, although it might feel like it to you. And ultimately just make a final decision to be willing to make better choices to find your inner happiness.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. It's been really great. And I want that for people. I want people to be able to not just feel like they're lugging their bodies around, which I think I'm not too far removed from that, from being in that situation where I felt like your body is just something that you're lugging with you, but to actually be able to utilize it, to be able to perform with it, to use it to have you be able to do the things that you want to do. Because when you're a sedentary person and you're not well nourished and all of that, your progress in life doesn't really move either. Like it really doesn't. Like everything ties in together, and people are disconnected from that. Yeah. And you guys are talking about fast food because you're in Raleigh. So we don't really do that here in New York. Like a lot of people, but whenever I visit people that have kitchens in other parts of the country, they eat fast food all the time.
Right.
I mean, have you guys ever experienced? I mean, like, yeah. I know you guys don't, but have you, I mean, I don't know. Have you, I'm sure you know people that do that. Like they've got kitchens, but they're not, but they still do that. And you can make, there are other options for you besides that.
Yeah. I realized as I said it, that probably ordering delivery in New York City is not you know, the ideal thing to do, considering.
Oh, it's great. Delivery is fine. We just don't eat fast food.
It just costs you like an arm and a leg and, well, any other part of your body that New York City might want.
In Raleigh, I mean, and most big cities, especially in the South, everything is super easy to get here, especially after COVID, but none of it is healthy. Like there are very few choice restaurants, and like Chipotle, I don't particularly think the way that people eat Chipotle is healthy, but it is a healthy chain, quote unquote, fast food restaurant.
Healthier.
But you can eat it if you just don't get the cheese and the sour cream and
And the chips that are deep fried. Yeah. Right. Or you can make healthier decisions anywhere you go. That's not the point. But to what you're saying, we all have kitchens here. There's not an apartment in this city that I'm aware of that doesn't have a kitchen, but people just aren't using it because they don't know how, or they don't have that, they haven't made that decision to. And that's where they have to find their why to decide if that's part of their journey.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And again, it's deciding to learn how to use a kitchen. You know, we all can sit here and say, you know, it's easy, so on and so forth. But we all had to kind of, again, you know, learn and change things. And, you know.
Yeah, it's not a comparison of where we are right now. It's a comparison of where they are versus where they want to be.
Yep.
Right? Not where we are or where we're headed or where we were, but where they are in their journey along their why.
And you know what? I'm a student of Instagram University. Like in my early days, I learned so much from Instagram University, and I think a lot of people also attend its sister college, YouTube University,
TikTok University as well. It's the
but if you are a
brother,
you don't know how to cook. You don't know how to do a very basic core routine. I'm not talking about I'm not talking about people that are, I'm talking about just step one and step two. If you don't even know step one and step two, there's so much available, but people just have to want, you just have to want to be able to just take step one and step two. And I attended Instagram University for step one and step two.
And then you took lessons, you sought experts, you looked for mentors,
yes,
you
read absolutely.
Books, you listened absolutely. To podcasts, you manifested, yes. You meditated. Those are advanced steps,
yes.
3 through 5,000, right?
And that is the journey, and that is great. Yes, absolutely. I have sought out so many mentors. I have so many people that are so talented. But you have to be willing to take the first step and to connect with someone like me and someone like you and, well, you, Sean, and you, Dan, like to be able to connect with at least one person that can help you. And without that connection, you're going to be standing still because you're not going to know. So you have to be able to reach out and to connect. And I hope that anybody that's listening to this that is unsure of any of their next moves, if what is the one degree that they'll reach out to any and all of us for that guidance, because that's why we're here. You know, we're here for that.
And Andy, how would they reach out to you?
They could reach out to me on my website is getthefuckoff.com. That is right. Getthefuckoff.com. You can get on my email list there, or you can email me at andy@getthefuckoff.com. I'm super responsive and I'm on social _ get the fuck off on Instagram. And I'm super responsive on Instagram also. But definitely getthefuckoff.com. That is the fastest, easiest way. And all my shit is there. My blogs, my podcast, a way to get in touch with me, all of that.
I love it. And I mean, we said it before, but I'm going to reiterate, like I could go on for like 6 more podcasts with you. I mean, this is a dream trio right here.
I love it. A great time. I really appreciate you guys having me on the podcast. This was really, really great.
No, thank you so much for being so vulnerable, being so open and honest about not only your journey, but you know, where your why and you know what brings you joy and sharing your passion with us. So thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you being on, and I really love the fact that you are our first guest, because I think it just continues to echo really sentiments that both Coach Sean and, you know, I have gone in the first 2 episodes of really change can happen. You have to decide it for yourself. And, you know, ultimately you just gotta, well, get the fuck off and go do it. Right. So, I love it. And I love that, you know, we just continue to be able to reverberate, you know, same ideas. Something tells me you'll be back because I feel like we have, a encyclopedia worth of things that we can talk to you about. We'll have our people call. Yeah. We'll have our people call your people.
Absolutely. Third host of the podcast.
Just don't bring so many medals next time. You're starting to intimidate me with all your
or I'll take them. I'll take them
down.
I'm
not a runner over here, okay? We hope you all enjoyed this episode of Crash Course by Live Unbreakable.
And if we made you smile or stop to think about something in a new way, go ahead and screenshot, post, or share this episode so we can get your feedback and share more knowledge with the world.
Now get out there, eat, train, live, and subscribe to our Crash Course podcast so you never miss a beat. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn to keep up with all things Live Unbreakable.